From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson.
And I'm Ira Melman. On today's program, we'll take a look at Tuesday's midterm elections in the United States.
And if the election results weren't bad enough for President Obama's Democratic Party, a prominent Chinese newspaper had some harsh words for him as he prepares to travel to China.
Michael Lippin will have that story. David Byrd will take a look at the combined work of Ben Stiller, the comedian and actor, and along with acclaimed director Noah Baumbach in a new film.
Well, that's going to be really good. We examine how Wall Street reacted to Republican gains in Tuesday's election.
And Japan has made a change of coaches after a worse than hoped for performance in World Cup competition in Brazil a few months ago.
All this and more coming your way on today's VOA Global. We're glad to have you with us here on the Voice of America. Welcome into Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asia news and events for Thursday, November 6th. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, China has gone to great lengths to ensure its hosting of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meetings in Beijing are a success. And to do that, it is telling Beijing residents to leave town. It's imposing stringent measures to prevent smog from clouding the skies and cars from clogging the city streets. VOA's Bill Ai joins us from Beijing with more.
For most of October, Beijing was cloaked in smog like this. But now, as it hosts the region's biggest economic event of the year, the skies are clear. At least for now, thanks to tough traffic controls and orders for polluting factories to shut down. Beijing's city government even created an APEC holiday that closes public schools and state-run businesses, encouraging some of the 20 million residents to leave town. Businesses next to hotels housing dignitaries have been told to shut down as well. Zhang and Su work near a hotel in Beijing where an APEC delegation is staying.
We may go hiking outside Beijing tomorrow. We'll go out and have as much fun as we can. There's really not much else we can do.
Online travel agency Ctrip.com jumped on the opportunity, offering discounted trips. Public affairs manager Jane Chun says Ctrip.com has booked 100,000 trips from Beijing during APEC.
We've issued a series of discounted travel packages to encourage Beijing residents to travel and ease the pressure on traffic during APEC.
But not all are heeding the call to leave. Medical student Zhang Yuliang says she will stay put.
I checked airline tickets online with my friends, but the prices were way too expensive and tickets were selling fast. It seemed like everybody was going out of town. So I thought the best thing to do was to stay here, away from the crowds.
This week, most Beijing residents were relieved to see the sky again, but many say they want a long-term solution for the air pollution and traffic instead of temporary fixes. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
More big meetings next week include the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, and the East Asia Summit, of which Myanmar will be hosting leaders. The gathering will include the U.S. and Russian presidents, China's paramount leader, and the Indian Prime Minister, as well as Southeast Asian leaders. VOA correspondent Steve Herman is in Bangkok, and he tells us about the limited expectations from the gathering.
The ASEAN way of consensus, conciliation, and non-intervention has helped keep the peace in recent years in a historically volatile region. And that is the only effective way for ASEAN to function, contends a former Secretary General, Rodolfo Severino, in a VOA interview via Skype.
No, ASEAN is not about breakthroughs. ASEAN works on an incremental basis.
At last year's summits, U.S. President Barack Obama canceled his trip amid the U.S. government shutdown, allowing China's leaders to grab the spotlight. Critical for U.S. diplomacy this year will also be the FaceTime, one-on-one, with government heads from outside ASEAN's 10 member states.
Mr. Obama's sideline discussions will cover a number of critical issues, including the Islamic State extremist movement, the continued trouble in Ukraine, difficulties with the Trans-Pacific trade talks, China's maritime expansion, and how to contain West Africa's Ebola epidemic. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
There is some intrigue in the waters in Asia. India expressing strong concerns to Sri Lanka that it is allowing Chinese submarines to dock at its port this month. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi on how China's growing naval presence in the Indian Ocean region has opened a new era of rivalry for the two Asian countries.
When the Chinese submarine Changjiang and warship Changxingdao docked at Colombo Harbour for 5 days this month, alarm bells rang in New Delhi. It was the second time a Chinese submarine docked at a Sri Lankan port. After the first arrived 7 weeks ago, India quickly warned the island nation on its southern tip that their presence was unacceptable to New Delhi. Both China and Sri Lanka dismissed Indian concerns. Beijing's defense ministry said the submarines were on refueling stops during anti-piracy missions in the Indian Ocean and Gulf of Aden. A Navy spokesperson in Colombo pointed out that in the last 4 years, more than 230 warships had called at Colombo port for goodwill visits or refueling. That has failed to allay India, where worries are rising about China's expanding footprint in the Indian Ocean, says Sukhdeo Muni at the Institute for Defense Studies and Analysis in New Delhi.
Fact is that the Chinese naval reach is increasing very fast. And that obviously creates some concern in India, because submarines are considered to be a more potent attack weapon or attack vehicle.
While the two Asian giants' territorial disputes in the high Himalayas have grabbed the most attention, analysts say their rivalry in the Indian Ocean is steadily building up. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Ebola has been a big concern in Africa and in other parts of the world. Now Australia will be helping to staff an Ebola treatment center in Sierra Leone. Prime Minister Tony Abbott said while Canberra will not deploy health workers to the virus-hit areas in West Africa, it will be contracting a private Australian company to help run the facility in Sierra Leone. Phil Mercer has more for us from Sydney.
The Australian government will commit up to $17.4 million to the 100-bed Ebola treatment centre in Sierra Leone, which is being built by the United Kingdom. While Australia won't send emergency teams to virus-affected parts of West Africa, it will pay a private health company to staff the clinic. Australia has previously refused to send workers to tackle an epidemic that's killed about 5,000 people in Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. It's the worst outbreak of the disease since it was identified in 1976. The Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott said it was too dangerous to deploy health teams because there were no plans in place to properly treat them should they become infected with Ebola. But Mr. Abbott now says a deal has been reached with Britain to treat any Australian working in West Africa who becomes infected.
In the last few days, we have had assurances from the United Kingdom that they would treat any Australian who is working in the Ebola-impacted parts of West Africa.
Charities and health groups have welcomed the government's decision to boost its efforts to fight Ebola. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
Stop by our website at voanews.com if you'd like some expanded versions of the stories we've presented to you today. And as always, you can join us each day on VOA Global for Daybreak Asia. Please feel free to download the program if you'd like to hear it and take it with you as you go through your day. I'm Jim Stevenson. Hope we can meet up again tomorrow for another edition of Daybreak Asia.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America in Washington. Along with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. We want to hear from you, and we keep telling you this all the time. And guess what? We're actually starting to hear from you, whether we want to hear from you. No, we do want to hear from you. And as far as stories are concerned, stories we have covered here, you're chiming in on some of them.
That's right, Ira. We had a story on our website about ISIS, who says that they have millions of dollars in funding, some of which has come from looting Iraq and Syria. But some Gulf states are also said to have provided support for the Islamic extremists. There's also video with this story on our website. And we've had many comments, including one from Judgment Day.
Yeah, we have. It said it's quite clear that these Arab countries are helping this barbaric group just to kill and suppress Kurds in Syria and Iraq. If you've noticed, ISIS is fighting is only with Kurds, and history shows how Iraq, Syria, Turkey, and Iran treated Kurds. Now they want to eradicate Kurds in the name of divine, but I consider Kurdish people more religious than Arabs.
We had comments, too, on a story about a Pakistani mob beating Christian couple to death. Police and eyewitnesses in eastern Pakistan said an angry crowd had attacked and beat a married Christian couple to death after accusing them of desecrating the Quran.
We heard from Shir Alam and also from Snow Baz. Snow Baz said justice must be brought to light no matter whatever whom they are. This world is no more a nationalism. Internationalism must be forward to make this world much more a much more civilized society.
We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Weibo. You can also check out our website at voanews.com and be sure to write us by email, voaasia@voanews.com. We welcome all of your comments.
Did you ever hear somebody tell you, did anybody ever tell you to take a hike?
Oh, I can't tell you how many times that's happened.
In the United States, that kind of means every once in a while when somebody tells you to take a hike, that just means get out of here.
Please.
Yeah. Now, we don't know whether anybody told Rob Lilwalt to take a hike or not. But
he told himself, I think.
Yeah. He decided to do just that. Boy, did he take a hike. Started in Mongolia, ended up in Hong Kong. Jim will talk to him coming up.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Asian Authors Abridged. You know, the ability of humans to overcome obstacles and achieve great goals is nothing short of marvelous. An innate nomadic drive and curiosity has taken men across continents, oceans, and even to the moon and back. Adventure and motivational speaker Rob Lilwall has followed that spirit in an amazingly long bicycle ride and his latest trek, a 5,000-kilometer hike through China, which became a book titled Walking Home from Mongolia. Lilwall tells me his school classmates would never have guessed he would have become such a long-distance traveler.
As I was growing up, I was never the toughest person at school. I was never in the top sports team. And I used to get frightened of things very easily. But I think if we put a good challenge we want to do, maybe find a friend or two to do it with and start small and build it up, I think we can get really surprised at what we are able to pull off in the end.
Well, you went about 5,000 kilometers. How long did that take?
It took just over 6 months, and we tended to walk about 6 days a week. By the end of the walk, I just felt like I was a ruined man, really. It was pretty hard.
How did you decide to walk this long distance to begin with?
I had decided I wanted to go and explore the world on my bicycle, but instead of setting off from England and cycling off into the world, I thought it would be more fun if I started as far away from home as possible and then cycled back again. So I jumped on a plane, flew to northeast Russia, and then cycled home, and that took me about 3 years. But along the way on that trip, I had met a beautiful girl when I was in Hong Kong, who then I married, so I'd met my wife-to-be.
You must have had some incredible scenery, though, along the way that you could only have seen by hiking this.
I think China is just extraordinary in its variation. As you go from north to south, you've got, you know, the Gobi Desert in the north, which is we were walking across in winter, so it's just this kind of epic, bleak, white, flat emptiness. We crossed the Great Wall, and then we actually followed the Great Wall for about a week, just through the mountains of Shaanxi Province, and that was incredible. And then we got down to the Yellow River, which was completely frozen over. And then the summer started to arrive, and as we entered southern China, you're suddenly in this much more tropical climate.
You made the trip with expedition filmmaker Leon McCarran, who was able, obviously, to record this visually. Did you ever feel that the two of you were in any sort of maybe a precarious situation along the way or had some security fears as you're just basically going alone through this?
The traffic, I think, is actually one of your number one dangers if you're spending much time on a road, because it only takes one driver to be not concentrating for a couple of seconds, and that's the end. But I would say China, it didn't feel much threat from crime. China always felt very warm and friendly and pretty safe.
You must have 1,000 wonderful memories from this, but what are some of the things that really stand out the most in your mind from your journey?
There are different types of highlights. The Great Wall that we saw was not full of tourists. This was out in the middle of nowhere with literally nobody on it for hundreds of miles. So that was a great, great privilege and experience. I think the other side of the highlights was the people we met, whether it was coming across some nomads who would invite us to stay. We knocked on the door and walked in. They all almost kind of fell over themselves because they couldn't believe these two strange foreigners were appearing. And then they just became so hospitable, invited us and fed us and looked after us. And it was, you feel like made these really good friends.
Well, I was going to ask you about the end of the trip and how it felt as you were getting closer to Hong Kong and you could almost smell the finish line there and actually see the city come into sight.
The end of expeditions is always a magical time. Leon, my cameraman, he's from Northern Ireland and he grew up right next to the sea. So he was on the point of tears, really, when he saw the water again. And we walked down into the city and got to the harbour waterfront where my wife, Christine, was waiting for us. So, a sight for sore eyes, no sore heart.
Rob Lilwall, adventurer and motivational speaker based in Hong Kong. His book, Walking Home from Mongolia, 10 Million Steps Through China, is published by Hodder & Stoughton. I'm Jim Stevenson at Voice of America. You may hear more of this interview at voanews.com. And be sure to open another book with me again next week when Asian Authors Abridged is heard on many great radio stations around the world, streamed Thursdays on VOA Global, and you may subscribe to our podcast at voanews.com.
This is China Focus with Michael Lippin, filling in for your regular host, Sarah Williams. Days before U.S. President Barack Obama travels to China for a regional summit, a prominent Chinese state-run newspaper is accusing him of being an ineffective leader. The Global Times published an editorial early Wednesday saying it believes that Mr. Obama has not lived up to the expectations of his supporters and that U.S. society has grown tired of what the article called his banality. President Obama is due to visit Beijing next week for an Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, summit, followed by one-on-one meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Mr. Xi's government has engaged in sharp disagreements with the Obama administration on issues such as alleged human rights abuses, sovereignty disputes in the South China Sea, and cyber espionage. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is heading to Beijing on Friday to prepare for Mr. Obama's summits with APEC leaders and the Chinese president. The top American diplomat highlighted the priorities of his trip in a speech in Washington on Tuesday. In that speech, Kerry said the United States will try to manage its differences with China constructively while also trying to coordinate U.S. and Chinese action on issues of mutual interest, such as climate change, global security, and trade. But Kerry stressed that when it comes to the differences, Washington will not just agree to disagree with Beijing. Ankit Panda is an editor of The Diplomat, an Asia-Pacific current affairs publication. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Panda what he makes of Kerry's emphasis on taking a tough approach toward China on certain issues.
This seems to perfectly fit in line with recent trends that we've seen in the United States approach to China. Earlier this year, for example, the Department of Justice indicted five members of the People's Liberation Army of China for cyber espionage, which was a watershed moment in U.S.-China relations. It was the first indictment of its kind, and obviously China didn't appreciate that. And essentially, that showed us that the United States would begin to take China head on and signal its commitment to pushing back on state-sponsored cyber espionage, just as one example. The other example that Secretary Kerry refers to in his speech is the South China Sea, where he says, again, we'll have to agree to disagree. And he essentially restates the United States policy on territorial disputes. He says that the United States will be involved, but it won't come down on the merits of particular disputes. It will stand up for freedom of navigation. And I believe he also mentioned ongoing process for a code of conduct in the South China Sea between ASEAN and China and other countries. So I think we're starting to see the United States really take a strong normative position on these issues with China.
He said the two major powers have a profound opportunity to set a constructive course on any number of issues, from climate change to global trade. For that reason, quote, our relationship has to be carefully managed and guided, not by news hooks and grand gestures, but by a long-term strategic vision, hard work, good diplomacy, and good relationships. Can you parse those words for me?
Secretary Kerry touches upon such massive topics in just those few words. I mean, there's obviously so many details that have to be ironed out between the U.S. and China. Let me just briefly address the issue of trade, for example. One of the topics that looms large over the Asia-Pacific as a whole is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has been long delayed, but looks to be increasingly promising if the United States can pull off these negotiations with a variety of countries. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership is also an example of the United States containing China, at least from the Chinese perspective. So in one way, you know, something the United States could do here is to look to set up a bilateral investment treaty with China to assuage concerns that it is trying to indeed contain China with this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which excludes China but includes other major regional economies. On the issue of climate change, obviously, that is also an area where the United States and China have considerable disagreements. To my knowledge, there are no signs of that improving in the short term.
That was current affairs editor Ankit Panda of The Diplomat. In another article by The Global Times, Chinese analysts say they suspect that some Chinese authorities in the Tibetan Autonomous Region have sympathies toward the Dalai Lama. Beijing regards the exiled Tibetan leader as a dangerous separatist, a charge he rejects. In the report, a senior Chinese official with the Communist Party's internal disciplinary body says communist authorities in Tibet should focus on neutralizing separatists and maintaining social stability. The article gave no estimate of how many officials in Tibet are suspected of supporting the Dalai Lama. We'll be back tomorrow for another China Focus. Until then, send us an email to voaasia@voanews.com or write to me on Twitter at Michael_Lippin.
It's time for Asia Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman.
Well, Asia markets closed mostly lower, with Hong Kong's Hang Seng down 0.6%. South Korea's KOSPI dropped 0.2% to 1,931.43. Australia's S&P ASX 200 nearly flat at 55.18. Markets in mainland China and Taiwan also fell. Singapore and India were slightly higher. Japan's Nikkei 225 erased losses in the afternoon, finishing up 0.4% at 16.93.
Down were shares of Japanese telecommunications and internet company SoftBank, 2.3% off in Tokyo after its quarterly financial report showed its recent acquisition of U.S. carrier Sprint Corporation would weigh on its operating earnings. Sprint is eliminating 2,000 jobs, that's about 5% of its staff, to cut $1.5 billion in annual spending. It also reported a $765 million loss last quarter.
And the dollar rose to 114.69 yen from 113.69 yen late Tuesday, and the euro fell to 1.2472 from 1.2548. I hope you got that. You will be tested later.
That's a summary of Asia Business News here on the Voice of America.
This is Today in History. On November 6, 1860, one-term Illinois Congressman Abraham Lincoln became the first Republican Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. As soon as Lincoln won the election, southern states began to withdraw from the Union. The American Civil War broke out the following April. On this date in 1917, the Battle of Passchendaele in Belgium, also known as the Third Battle of Ypres, one of the major battles of the First World War, ended. In 1962, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution condemning South Africa's policy of apartheid or racial separation. And on November 6, 1985, leftist guerrillas of the 19th of April movement seized control of the Palace of Justice in Bogota, Colombia. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America in Washington. I don't know whether everyone here wants to be associated with this, but Huffington Post rated what makes people sexy and not sexy. Okay, and basically for men. Number
Tell
five,
us,
Ira. Master your facial hair.
What?
Yeah. Research out of Australia says a heavy stubble is the most attractive kind of facial hair a man can have above full beards, light stubble, and even clean shaven.
Yeah, if you like sandpaper.
Also, don't smile unless you're a woman. Women like subdued men. And also, near the top is to get a dog.
Thank you, Ira.
Anytime.
The latest world news is next. International Edition and Steve Norman.
And now, VOA's International Edition. This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, cars hit a crowd of pedestrians in Jerusalem. President Obama reacting to the U.S. midterm election, plus Australia boosting efforts to fight Ebola in West Africa. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Israeli police say a Palestinian man has driven a car into a crowd of pedestrians in Jerusalem in a deliberate attack that killed one person, injured nine others, including several police officers. The assault followed a clash between Israeli police and dozens of Palestinians who threw rockets at officers near a disputed Jerusalem holy site after Jewish nationalists announced plans to visit the area. Neighboring Jordan recalled its ambassador to Israel to protest what it called unacceptable Israeli raids at the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount, also known as the Harim al-Sharif in East Jerusalem. Jordan's State Minister of Media Affairs is Mohammed al-Momani.
Since early this morning, we've been following the situation in Al-Haram al-Sharif and Al-Aqsa Mosque, and we have seen that more than 200 Israeli soldiers raided and security officials raided the Haram al-Sharif. And this is unacceptable. And therefore, the Jordanian government have taken the decision to recall the Jordanian ambassador in Tel Aviv for consultation, as well as asking our delegation in New York to submit an official complaint to the Security Council. For this to be debated at the Security Council level.
Israel briefly closed the mosque at Al-Aqsa last week amid growing unrest after police killed a suspected Palestinian gunman. That happened in a nearby Arab neighborhood. Suspect had allegedly shot and critically wounded an Israeli rabbi who advocates Jewish prayers at the disputed holy place and even the rebuilding of the biblical temple there. U.S. politics now. President Obama held a post-election news conference on Wednesday where he said his work with the newly elected Congress was already underway one day after Republicans gained control of both the House and Senate in midterm elections.
First, I'm submitting a request to Congress for funding to ensure that our doctors, scientists, and troops have the resources that they need to combat the spread of Ebola in Africa and to increase our preparedness for any future cases here at home. Second, I'm going to begin engaging Congress over a new authorization to use military force against ISIL. The world needs to know we are united behind this effort, and the men and women of our military deserve our clear and unified support.
Mr. Obama said administration's core principles remain same after Republicans won election victories. He acknowledged that he is not likely to agree with lawmakers on all of their proposed legislation.
Congress will pass some bills I cannot sign. I'm pretty sure I'll take some actions that some in Congress will not like. That's natural. That's how our democracy works. But we can surely find ways to work together on issues where there's broad agreement among the American people.
President Obama said the election showed that Americans want to see an end to Washington gridlock.
The American people sent a message, one that they've sent for several elections. Now, they expect the people they elect to work as hard as they do. They expect us to focus on their ambitions and not ours. They want us to get the job done. All of us in both parties have a responsibility to address that sentiment. Still, as president, I have a unique responsibility to try and make this town work. So to everyone who voted, I want you to know that I hear you. To the two-thirds of voters who chose not to participate in the process yesterday, I hear you too.
Asked at that news conference whether the White House would engage in a post-election recalibration, Mr. Obama said he would focus on improving the situation of the American people and not his own ambitions. Presumptive Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said he will work with Mr. Obama to win approval on international trade pacts and tax reform, and said they agreed in a telephone call to look for issues where they could reach accord. McConnell said one message of the election is that a politically divided government need not result in continued gridlock in Washington.
In Washington, I think there are a lot of people who believe that just because you have divided government, it doesn't mean you don't accomplish anything.
Mr. McConnell, after winning his seat in the Senate on Tuesday night, again spoke about the future.
Friends, this experiment in big government has lasted long enough. It's time to go in a new direction.
House Speaker John Boehner said the Republican-controlled Congress will work on energy and jobs legislation that he says Senate Democrats have been stalling while in control. He said it is time for government to start getting results. Delegation of West African leaders in Burkina Faso trying to defuse a political crisis they say is set off by the departure of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. Presidents of Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal arrived in Ouagadougou on Wednesday to meet with political and religious leaders, including the country's military-appointed interim president, Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida. A VOA reporter on the scene says the head of states have asked politicians, religious leaders, and civil society groups to each name three candidates to lead a transitional government. Burkina Faso's military took control of the country on Friday after Mr. Compaoré resigned, fled the country following violent protest against an effort to extend his rule. And Australia will help staff an Ebola treatment center that in Sierra Leone. Prime Minister Tony Abbott saying a private Australian company will be hired to do all of it. Phil Mercer has our report.
The Australian government will commit up to $17.4 million to the 100-bed Ebola treatment center in Sierra Leone, which is being built by the United Kingdom. While Australia won't send emergency teams to virus-affected parts of West Africa, it will pay a private health company to staff the clinic. Australia has previously refused to send workers to tackle an epidemic that's killed about 5,000 people in Sierra Leone, Guinea and Liberia. Mr. Abbott now says a deal has been reached with Britain to treat any Australian working in West Africa who becomes infected. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
And many thanks to you, Phil, and everyone else. Those are the stories making news. There's a lot more at voanews.com. And if you find yourself on the internet at Twitter, I'm there at VOA Norman. Listen, everybody, have a nice Thursday.
We check business now on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman.
Stocks returned to record levels Wednesday as a rebound in oil prices boosted energy stocks. Stock market on Wall Street also gained after the completion of midterm elections that saw Republicans take control of the Senate. The direction of the stock market has been dictated by swings in the price of oil this week. Energy stocks plunged on Monday and Tuesday and reports that Saudi Arabia was cutting prices for U.S.-bound crude.
You can add another multinational company affected by China's economic slowdown, this time General Motors and its joint ventures. They sold about 291,000 vehicles in China in October. While that was the company's best October in the world's largest auto market, the rate of growth for October 2013 slowed to 2.3%. Shanghai GM's domestic sales rose 5.6% during October. Buick's October sales in China increased 7.9% on an annual basis, but demand for new vehicles is still growing in China. Industry-wide sales expanded at the slowest pace in 19 months.
Well, the battle for smartphone payments isn't just between Apple and the merchants. The carriers aren't about to hand the opportunity to Apple either. SoftCard, a joint venture between AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon, just launched a free app for Windows phones, in addition to its Android app that allows consumers consumers to pay for goods by simply tapping their phones on the wireless pad available at many retailers. What makes this payment solution different from Apple Pay and Google Wallet is that SoftCard works on not just one type of device, but on both Windows and Android. Additionally, unlike Apple Pay, which requires the purchase of an iPhone 6, which sells for more than $600 in some places, SoftCard users can use their existing phones in many cases.
Everybody's watching Alibaba, so are the analysts. Rising costs are nothing to worry about, they say, upon issuing a wave of bullish notes on the company. That's business news on VOA Global.
And stocks jumped back into record territory Wednesday after Republican Party secured control of the U.S. Senate for the first time in 8 years on Tuesday.
We have American Cafe coming up. Ira, we know you've got a good one for us, followed by David Bird's Now here on VOA Global.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Like other Americans around the country, New Yorkers went to the polls Tuesday to cast their vote in the midterm elections. While this was not a presidential election year, they had the opportunity to sound off on issues of importance to them. VOA's Adam Phillips went to a polling station in Midtown Manhattan and asked a random sampling of people how they voted and how they felt about the elections overall.
On an unseasonably warm Election Day morning, a man named Horace bounds up the steps of a polling station, having just cast his vote and evidently feeling pretty good.
My experience today was very pleasant. It was very quick. It doesn't mean too much to me as a midterm election, not so much going on. Except for this governor, I think, is important. Other than that, pretty neutral on the whole deal.
What about the actual process of voting? I mean, even though it's a midterm, do you get a little bit of a thrill, or is it just kind of a pro forma exercise?
No, I get a real bang out of it. Besides paying your taxes and doing jury duty, that's pretty much all this country asks of me. It's a pretty good deal.
Voter Sylvia Barrison says she made a point to vote because she feels many everyday New Yorkers are getting a pretty bad deal.
What matters to me is jobs for all the people who are still without jobs, a Congress that might actually do something and pass bills that would help expand opportunities for people, and closing of the ridiculous gap we have in our country from people who make a fortune versus those who make barely enough to live on, and that widening gap.
Barrison says a high point in her experience as a voter came in 2008 when she voted for Barack Obama for president for the first time.
That was a big thrill. It felt like finally all the work done in the 60s and 70s came to fruition with a president that actually looked like and sounded like the America that I care about. And here we are, so next time we're voting in a woman.
Brian Feuer, a Natalie-dressed money manager from the other end of the political spectrum, is about to cast his vote.
And I'm here to fulfill my civic duty.
What does it mean to you? I mean, can you tell us for our foreign listeners a little bit what that civic duty actually means, kind of in the heart?
Democracy is an important thing. People around the world fight for it on a daily basis. We enjoy it. It's easy to be lazy and let it go. You've got to take time out of your day once every year and get out there and fulfill your pledge not only to yourself but to your country.
Whatever the result, America's democracy, which someone once dubbed the least worst form of government, seems, for today at least, to be working quite well indeed. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Republicans did gain control of the U.S. Senate in Tuesday's elections. Mike O'Sullivan examines what effect one race in particular might have had on the balance of power in Washington.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell turned back a strong challenge from Democrat Allison Lundergan Grimes in Kentucky. Late Tuesday, Grimes consoled her supporters in a concession speech.
While tonight didn't bring us the result that we had hoped for, this journey, the fight for you, it was worth it.
McConnell pulled ahead only in the final days of the campaign to win a sixth term after a hard-fought and bitter race. He told supporters that the election was not about him or his opponent.
It was about a government that people no longer trust to carry out its most basic duties, to keep them safe, to protect the border, to provide dignified and quality care for our veterans. a government that can't be trusted to do the basic things because it's too busy focusing on things it shouldn't be focused on at all.
Attention will now shift to Washington as the new Congress is sworn in January. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
American Cafe is available on air and online 7 days a week at voanews.com and as a podcast on numerous platforms. In the American Cafe, I'm Ira Melman.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Comedian and actor Ben Stiller and acclaimed director Noah Baumbach combine on a new film, While We Were Young, about an aging documentary filmmaker and his wife who meet a dynamic young couple. Stiller plays Josh Shrebnick, a New York-based documentarian who never quite succeeded as much as he thought he would. He is 10 years into working on his magnum opus and has hit a creative logjam. Josh and his wife Cornelia, played by Naomi Watts, have tried to start a family and have not been able to. Josh, who is 44, is haunted by the feeling that something is missing. Adam Driver plays Jamie, a young and spontaneous artist who, along with his girlfriend Darby, played by Amanda Seyfried, are ready to drop the boring, everyday pursuits of life to go after whatever strikes their fancy. Eventually, Jamie and Darby's dreams collide with Josh's film to the point of involving Josh's celebrated filmmaker father-in-law, played by Charles Grodin. That sends Josh into a tailspin that culminates in a dramatic confrontation with Jamie. The film was written and directed by Noah Baumbach, who is best known for his autobiographical films Kicking and Screaming and 2005's The Squid and the Whale, for which he was nominated for 3 Golden Globes and an Academy Award. While We Were Young premiered at this year's Toronto Film Festival, where Ben Stiller told the Associated Press that working with Baumbach made him bring out things that made him a better actor.
I mean, I feel, yeah, working with a director like Noah, he's interested in different things, not just the joke. He's interested in the character, and he's interested in the movie being what he sees in his head, which is something I don't quite understand, which I like. I like working with a director where you don't quite see it the same way as they do, but yet you come together on enough stuff.
Baumbach, who is known for his meticulous precision, once took 55 takes just to get a scene right. He's the son of film critics Georgia Brown and Jonathan Baumbach. Stiller, who also worked with Baumbach on 2010's Greenberg, says that Noah's attention to detail helps make his films extraordinary.
That's what's fun, he'll do like 20 or 30 takes, and you go, why is he doing all these takes? And he never tells you why he's doing them, but, you know, he's waiting for something to happen or whatever it is, and it's fun to have, as an actor, it's fun to have that many chances and to explore it that much. It almost becomes like a play or something.
Naomi Watts plays Cornelia. She said that she was thrilled with the opportunity to work with both Ben Stiller and Noah Baumbach.
Both incredibly talented, very brainy people. The script, Noah's dialogue is really some of the best there is on screenplays. It just felt so truthful. And Ben underplays everything. He's such a funny but subtle actor. He's really great to work with. I learn a lot from both.
Adam Driver, who last worked with Baumbach on 2012's Francis Ha, says that he jumped at the chance to work with the writer-director again.
Sure, he just gets better, better and better. I just think that he is, one of the greatest directors that is alive, and we work with him on anything, to a Colgate commercial. I'd do it with him.
Amanda Seyfried plays Darby, as I mentioned, and she says that normally she's not really excited about walking the red carpet at film festivals. But she told the Associated Press in Toronto she was very excited about being there for this film.
Normally this red carpet stuff is like, it's just such a thing to get through. I don't like to speak, and I always second guess what I say, but
I'm so excited because I haven't seen it. Normally I've seen my movie, so I'm just like going to do this. But now I'm doing this, and then I get to go like watch a movie that I did a year ago with Naomi.
While We Were Young also stars former Beastie Boy Adam Horowitz and Maria Ditzia. Is this another Baumbach autobiography? Well, it could be. The filmmaker just turned 45. So what do you think? Do you plan to see While We Were Young? Are you a fan of Ben Stiller? How about Naomi Watts? Well, let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can always email us your questions or comments by addressing them to voaasia@voanews.com. That's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
And next time will be tomorrow at this same time. Coming up on VOA Global, by the way, I'm Ira Melman along with Jim Stevenson. Japan has made a decision because they did not like the way their football team played in the World Cup. So who pays the price for bad performance?
I don't know. Japan?
No, it's the coach. That's it. Simple as that. We do indeed check sports here. Japan's performance in the World Cup has led to a coaching change. Former Mexico boss Javier Aguirre has been appointed as the new head coach of Japan. The 55-year-old Mexico City resident replaces Italian Alberto Zaccheroni, who resigned earlier this month after failing to guide the Blue Samurai into the knockout stages of the World Cup in Brazil.
Well, also out is Rafael Nadal. We told you a couple days ago that he was undergoing surgery to remove his appendix. He has now been released from a hospital in Barcelona. He said everything went well. It was simple surgery. Well, that's easy for him to say. Nadal gave no timetable for his return to tennis, saying that he would start training after he had recovered fully. The Spaniard attempted to play through suspected appendicitis last month. He tried to treat the condition with antibiotics before opting for surgery.
It's kind of hurt. Roger Federer, Andy Murray, and the Bryan Brothers, good album, were among the winners of the ATP World Tour Awards. Federer was selected by his peers as winner of the Stefan Edberg Sportsmanship Award for a 10th time. Murray receives the Arthur Ashe Humanitarian Award for his involvement in fundraising exhibitions and campaigns. And Bob and Mike Bryan take the doubles award, and they've done that for the past 6 years.
We suspect there are a few of you out there who follow U.S. sports and the National Football League in particular. Tony Romo missed the Dallas Cowboys' first practice in London Wednesday, but head coach Jason Garrett said he's optimistic his quarterback may recover from a back injury just in time to start in a game against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Let's take a look at some of the NBA scores. Milwaukee beat Indiana on Tuesday, 87-81. Washington over the New York Knicks. Chicago beat Orlando. Portland over Cleveland. Toronto beat Oklahoma City. New Orleans over Charlotte. And Phoenix down the Los Angeles Lakers.
That's sports on VOA Global.
Now let's look at what's happening on the music scene. So much is happening this week. Legendary rock group Kiss will begin a 9-show residency in Las Vegas. Kiss Rocks Vegas will be staged at the Hard Rock Casino and Hotel through November 23rd.
Well, Ira, you may have this CD or even the vinyl album at home. Songs in the Key of Life, of course, by the legendary artist Stevie Wonder. He's kicking off his 2014 Songs in the Key of Life tour November 6th at New York's Madison Square Garden. And he's going to perform his 1976 double album in its entirety. That should be really good. The album sold 10 million copies in the United States. It produced several hits, including Isn't She Lovely, I Wish, and, of course, Sir Duke. The 11-city North American tour will wrap up in Oakland, California, December 5th. And just to give you a taste of it, here's Stevie Wonder's Sir Duke.
Mm-hmm. to sing, dance, and clap their hands. Well, just because a record has a groove, don't make it in the groove. But you can tell right away,
called a cold ending, Ira.
That it is. I also wondered through many years how many times he said, "You can feel it all over." One day I'm going to count it. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, what else is happening in the entertainment world? A new musical called On Your Feet opens on Broadway, and it opens Wednesday. The show is based on the life and music of seven-time Grammy winner Gloria Estefan and her husband. This happens all the time. The difference between Australia and Austria. It got Ban Ki-moon, the UN Secretary General. Slip of the tongue, not amused in Austria. He, after 20 minutes into his news conference, he apologized for thanking the people in Australia. He was talking about Austria.
Oops.
Yeah, that it happens. And, you know, they sell T-shirts in Austria and Vienna. It shows a picture of a kangaroo, a circle and a cross and against it. And it says there are no kangaroos in Austria. So,
well,
just don't do
that. That happens once in a while. At least he didn't play the wrong national anthem. We've heard that before at some sporting events.
That we have. Again, this let us explain to you who we are, what we're doing with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman, and we try to do this every day, and we keep trying to do this every day, and hopefully you are with us every day to hear what we are trying to do. And it is an hour-long program, and it also is, you can break it up if you'd like, as the voice of